many of the old papers like we have from Ansel Keys and all the diet wars, we will be able to put them through this system and we will find out how much bullshit really is in the literature. In other words, I'm taking this to the nth level that I told Huberman, and I'm going to prove Eddie Chang wrong. I'm going to show you how much of what's published in the literature is bullshit with this system. So guess what? I'm not just talking about new science. I'm going after all the sacred cows. I'm leaving nothing unturned.
Hello, critical thinkers. Welcome to this new episode of Healthy and Awake Podcast. Don't skip the intro. I want to say that right off the bat. This is a special episode that really requires me setting the scene. Now, if you do know who Dr. Jack Cruz is already, feel free to skip. Go right ahead, you know, hit that skip button and go right to where him and I are actually talking. But if you don't know who he is, I feel like it's important that I introduce him and the episode appropriately. So Dr. Jack Cruz is a world-renowned neurosurgeon. He is a health innovator. He is really considered by many to be the pioneer of the awareness around circadian health. And that's why I wear these blue light blocking glasses and talk about blue light and getting sunlight and those sorts of things. He has really pioneered the awareness around all of that. He is also a prolific author and speaker. He does many talks and conventions. He has a very popular book that helps people work on their health from a circadian health perspective. He's also a quantum health advocate. Sounds maybe a little out there, but really he emphasizes the importance of quantum biology and its impact on health. This is one smart dude. He's the founder of the Cruz Longevity Center, which is dedicated to helping people achieve optimal health and longevity. He's an educator, a mentor, and he's very outspoken. But he does curse up a storm. He is very aggressive in certain moments in how he speaks. And I just know for some people that can be a little off-putting, especially for some of my new audience who maybe doesn't know exactly what to expect on this show. But again, he's been on the show before. I don't know if I said that already. This is a returning guest, Dr. Jack Cruz. I spoke with him almost exactly a year ago. He's actually my first big guest on the show. So I think you're really going to enjoy this as long as you don't have sensitive ears, and no judgment if you do, really. So please enjoy this episode with Dr. Jack Cruz. Dr. Jack Cruz, thank you so much for being here today. It's actually been about almost exactly a year since we last spoke here on Healthy and Awake Podcast. I know you've been doing some great work in El Salvador. I'm wondering what's new there over the past year.
Well, I mean, President Bukele has publicly and formally announced the law that I wrote. He had a big event called the Age of Light event at Cerro Verde Volcano to announce it to the people of El Salvador. He was reelected by a landslide, and his inauguration was just June 1st. So you can see we're not that far from it. And the law is right now sitting in front of the Legislative Assembly to be passed.
So that's very cool.
Decentralized medicine is very close to being a reality in El Salvador. And there should be big collateral effects from that, because at the, you know, the event that we had, we kind of let the cat out of the bag about some of the other people that we've been working with. And we have a lot coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, I'm wondering a lot about that. I know you posted on your Twitter. I have a quote here. Today, we are meeting to reform the peer review by going from a peer-to-journal to peer framework to a peer-to-peer plan to remove the journals and editors who facilitated COVID mandates. So can you tell me what you mean by that?
Yeah, well, we're going to be using a company called Zorp. Anybody who probably listens to this podcast should probably start following Zorp on Twitter. Zorp's CEO, his name is Logan Allen, but his chief technology officer actually has become a pretty good friend of mine. In fact, funny thing is he's sitting right in my house over here right now. And he's working, you know, with Zorp. His name is Sam Parker. You can also follow him on Twitter. But basically, I came up with an idea that was stimulated from one of the researchers that I followed heavily throughout Twitter. And it was an old idea that he used. Most of you probably know Kevin McKiernan is somebody who I think is a patriot. he's the guy that confirmed that SV40 was in the messenger RNA jabs. And that was the information that I actually imparted to Bobby Kennedy, because even Bobby Kennedy didn't know that when I did the Rick Rubin podcast with him. And I explained to him, because SV40 was in the messenger RNA jabs, that this links you right back to the polio situation and why this is a big deal. And I'm not going to get into, you know, all the details of why this is a big problem for people, but the real problem for us in decentralized science, clinicians and the public, is that we had journal editors basically censoring people like Kevin McKiernan. Kevin used to work with Craig Venter in the Human Genome Project. And for those of you who don't know, that was a time during the Clinton administration where the federal government put money in, because we falsely believed that it would be humans would have 100,000 genes and, you know, our nearest relatives would have 23, 24,000. Turned out we have almost exactly the same number. I think there's only 200 to 400 different. And Kevin worked on that project. He morphed from humans and then got into medicinal chemistry, specifically related to plants. And then he morphed into the medicinal cannabis space. What's his goal there? He's an expert molecular biologist whose goal was to put cannabis genomes on the internet and try to get his research published. As you can imagine, when you're working in the cannabis space, you know, around 2000, 2005, 2010, it wasn't heavily funded. It was heavily regulated, and it was very, very difficult to get your research published. So Kevin fell upon a very interesting idea to use blockchain and a decentralized DAO called Dash to do and get papers published. And unfortunately, it failed. Part of the reason it failed is because the coins that they used to do all this, what we call shit coins, they're kind of like fiat money. And when Kevin began to post some of the stuff during the COVID vaccine, and I started seeing the data, not only from him, but also from the ethical skeptic and some other people. And I've been involved in doing a documentary with McCullough and Corey and Malone. The thing that my two cents that was put in there, I realized looking at the legal definitions from the Pfizer jab and the BioNTech jab, the fact that there was two legal definitions gave me a clue that there was something nefarious going on. And I mentioned that in the documentary. Well, long story short, I didn't have the smoking gun until Kevin comes along, and Kevin tested empty vials and found that in fact there was DNA plasmids and SV40 in those. That was later confirmed by one of his biggest nemesis, who is a guy named Philip Buchholz, who's a molecular biologist at the University of South Carolina. And when he found that McKiernan was not full of shit, that's kind of when the game changed for centralized science. And that's when I started to jump down the rabbit hole, and I realized right away that Kevin was basically censored, both not only on Twitter, but everywhere else. And he was also censored through his medicinal work in cannabis, because it was cannabis. And that's not how science is supposed to be done. We don't censor people. And it got me to thinking about the white paper in Bitcoin and thinking about decentralized money. And I said, is there a way to do what Kevin was doing in the beginning in 17 with the DAO Dash with Bitcoin? And then I fell upon an idea where we could use open timestamps in Bitcoin that Satoshi and the Bitcoin developers had put on there. And could that disintermediate the IP of Big Pharma? And could I also set it up that I could remove the Oracle problem in decentralized science? What does that mean? Meaning that if I have a good idea and I want to publish it, I don't have to go through a journal editor to get it published. I can actually put it right on the internet. So guys who listen to your podcast and people who listen to me on the internet can make their own decisions whether this is good science or bad science. The other benefit there is I can get the science published way faster. Yeah. In other words, it takes 12 to 18 months to get it done through, say, The Lancet, the British Journal of Medicine, or, you know, New England Journal of Medicine. I could have papers published in 6 to 8 weeks this way. And then here's the best part for me. most of you know, like a guy like Martin Kulldorff has been fired from Harvard because of censorship. But say if it was a paper that I thought Martin was an expert on, I could actually put, for want of a better term, a stake, pay him money to actually review my paper and tell me whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. I could pick out the experts in the world that I chose, who I thought were best able to do it, instead of a journal editor picking somebody who has confirmational biases or biases that are built in. And then the real benefit of that, that means that people that review journals who now have to do it for free, it's like indentured servitude, they will now get paid for the work that they do. It's like a proof of work mechanism. But the big benefit is we get to find out if a scientist's idea that he's published is good or bad right off the bat. So in other words, we can get rid of the superfluous much faster. That's one of the big problems in science now, that we have an unbelievable amount of literature that's all filled with shit. I mean, all of the nutrition data is filled with shit. None of it's reproducible. None of it's any good. You know, and most people, like, you know, Kevin, who's out there, and Jay Bhattacharya and Martin Kulldorff, those type of people, they know that 80% of what's published in the literature is horseshit anyway, because none of it has good controls, and most of it is tied to bias related to the journals and the editors. So my idea was to get rid of them. And that's only can be done if you use a decentralized platform to do it. And that's why the DAO Dash thing failed, because it used a shitcoin, which is a shitcoin and mimics what fiat money is. And I said, if we can do this on Bitcoin, we have to figure it out. So to finish the story, how Sam and Zork got involved, I went to an Urbit conference to actually talk about the decentralized medical freedom law in Portugal. And that's when I sat down with all of Logan's guys and Sam for 4 days. I didn't know anything about what Zork does, but they do something that's called zero knowledge proofs. Basically, what a zero knowledge proof is, when something is published, this will tell you definitively whether it's true or not true. In other words, it's like truth serum that you can use through coding. And I was very, very interested in how this worked. And to be honest with you, when I sat down the first day with Sam, I had no earthly idea. And I met Sam because he's a Bitcoiner, and I met him through a clubhouse room that we used to go in and just talk about Bitcoin. And it became very clear to me, listening to all the noise in the room, most of these other people in the room were, to be quite frank with you, either idiots or assholes. They were really just there for number go up. Some of them understood Bitcoin really well, but Sam was really different, because not only did he understand Bitcoin really well, he was a technical genius. And Sam understands the real basics of what Satoshi did. He understands what the core developers are doing. He understands what a decentralized network can truly do. And when I asked Sam to sit down with me after the 4 days of being at this Urbit conference, I said, Sam, I think zero knowledge proofs mixed with open timestamps on the Bitcoin blockchain is how we disintermediate big pharma. It's how we remove IP. It's how we remove the monopoly that they've become. And he just looked at me like I was batshit crazy. Until I developed the idea for him fully, that's when I sat down with Logan and all their team and laid it all out. And again, they didn't believe me, just as which I tell most of the people that follow me, that you shouldn't believe anything that comes out of my mouth either. You should question me just like you question everything else. So what did we do next? That's when we started to talk to some of the best scientists in the world in conference calls with Zorp and with Sam. And they wanted to find out, was this idea that I had technically feasible to do? And would there be a huge demand for it? What the demand would be? And how would it eventually go? When all this was going on at the same time, Nicole Shanahan kind of crashed into my life. And Nicole at the time was, you know, the ex-wife of Sergey Brin. She's a patent attorney. She had just gotten divorced and wound up getting hooked up with a guy named Jacob Strumwasser, who was I think he was an executive. I don't know what his position was, but in Lightning Labs, which is something that is linked to layer one payment systems in Bitcoin. So he was an expert also in Bitcoin. And he's the one that orange-pilled Nicole. See, Nicole is a Silicon Valley fiat scammer, as far as I'm concerned. Okay. I don't feel that way about her now, but that's kind of how I feel about everybody who's, you know, on the tech side of things.
Yeah.
And when she was married to Sergey, she certainly fit that bill. And when she had her daughter, Eka, who's born with autism, which I explained to her shortly, was related to both her experience with light and Sergey's experience with light and led to the autism, and explained how she was moved when she heard the podcast that I did with Rick and Huberman. Mm-hmm. In Tetragrammaton. And that's when she reached out to me and she goes, look, I want to give you $100 million to build a decentralized hospital and research facility in El Salvador to make this real. So you have to realize this discussion with Bukele, Zorp, and Sam is happening in a parallel universe while Nicole is coming into my life. So, you know, in the classic synkinesis move, the neurosurgeon says, I need to make chicken salad out of this chicken shit. And that's when I came up with the idea that I'm laying out to you now, that actually, I think all of these pieces and parts fit together. I just need to figure out how to make it work so that it will start. And from that soup that I just gave you, if you distillate it down, I had no idea that Nicole was going to be tapped by Bobby Kennedy to be the vice president. That technically was probably not good for Uncle Jack. Why? Because Nicole's kind of busy trying to get, you know, power in the United States with Bobby Kennedy, you know, to push both Bitcoin and medical freedoms, which I'm a big fan of. But it slowed down some of the other things that we're doing, you know, on the medical side and the research side. Why? Because we do need that money. And to Nicole's benefit, she sat down with me, and after talking to me, she bailed out Daylight Computer. They were getting ready to go bankrupt. And I told her, if you want to do something to help humanity before you get control and power, you need to save this company, because your ex-husband and all of his friends in Silicon Valley are trying to put them out of business. Why? Because of the blue light stuff. And I didn't have to explain that to her, because she knows. She's a patent attorney. She knows what patents Google owns. So she put her money down, and that told me she wasn't full of shit. That's when I started to respect her a little bit more and more. And then she said, well, what about my daughter? And I said, well, there's a guy in University of Texas at Austin named Francisco Lima Gonzalez. I said, he is the one guy in centralized science that seems not to have his head up his ass about light. I said, he's been studying red light for a while. He just hasn't studied it with autism. I said, I think if you donate some money to him, that he can do some studies that will actually help you realize some of the things where I think autism comes from. And then she said to me, she goes, well, I want to know what you think. And I said, okay, I'll write you a blog. So I wrote the Quantum Engineering 45 blog, literally, in about a day, and it was written for Echo. And I put that idea out on the podcast, I should say on the blog. And I sent it to Nicole and I said, this is where I think autism really comes from. I said, but this is just my theoretical quantum biologic idea. I said, we need to prove it. And I think Francisco Lima is the first step in, you know, proving that. So she gave him $20 million.
Wow.
So the reason I have uber respect for Nicole, even though I don't agree with everything she stands for from an ideologic perspective, I can tell you this, she's got skin in the game. And she is very serious, just as Bobby is, about medical freedoms and chronic health disease that she wants to help the world. And she's now doing that. She's not only doing it because she put her fiat shitcoin money to work, but she also is doing it because she wants to become vice president of the United States so that she can maybe change some of the things that President Bukele has asked my help with there. And many people don't know this, but President Bukele cleared me to share the law with Bobby Kennedy. And I actually gave the law to Bobby Kennedy. His healthcare attorney is a guy named Aaron Seary, who you probably know is pretty famous in the vaccine world. If you follow him on Instagram or Twitter, you'll know he's a very serious cat, and I like him a lot. And after I shared the law, he called me up, and he basically told me what Bobby said. He goes, not even Ron DeSantis could pass this law in Florida because it's so tight and inclusive. And the funny part is Aaron thought Bobby hooked us up so that I could get help rewriting the law so it would get passed. And I told Aaron, I said, time out. President Bukele's already said the law's good enough. He's going to get it passed. I'm just sharing this law with you. And then about 6 weeks later, I got a call back from Bobby Kennedy saying, hey, could we use a couple of pages of the law in our platform? And President Bukele said, no problem. A-okay. So all that occurred probably 6 to 8 months ago. And it occurred after I did the podcast with Bobby and Rick. And where we are now, now that President Bukele got reelected this past February and re-inaugurated, we are now pedal to the metal in El Salvador. I don't know. I think we're on a faster track if Nicole probably wasn't running for VP, but has it stopped what we're doing with Zorp, what we're doing with this idea about decentralized science? What I'm doing, decentralized medicine, no, it hasn't stopped me one bit.
Well, I do have follow-up questions, but I actually want to take 2 minutes to kind of recap what you said and make sure I understand everything. I know you're frustrated with the centralized medical model in the United States, and in an effort to combat that, you moved to El Salvador to work with the president, and at the heart of it, or at least part of it, is really shifting from the centralized, trust the institutions, that's where you get your science from, to shift from that to a blockchain model similar to Bitcoin, which I know you also often talk about. And in order to accomplish that transition, you're working directly with the president of El Salvador, as well as any other people that you need to in order to make this happen. Did I miss anything there?
Yeah, I would say probably the big missing piece is that I actually got the buy-in of the key scientists all over the world. We've actually talked to them, and I can tell you that Kevin McKiernan said he would like to be the first scientist to ever use this model, you know, since he was the one that really helped germinate the idea in my mind. And Jay Bhattacharya and Martin Koldoff the same way. You know, we also had Kat Lindley involved, who's, you know, is a big fighter of the World Economic Forum and the WHO, you know, with the treaty. She was in on some of the calls, and we've had other attorneys involved and other big scientists across the world. Some of them I'm probably not going to mention their names, but I can tell you that it became very clear to Zorp that the market here, we're talking trillions of dollars. We're not talking millions. We're not talking billions. We are talking about disintermediating healthcare in a centralized fashion at its fundamental core, where it really broke down. And when you do that, that means that you have to have a system ready so that it can run either parallel or replace that system. I think the political hot potato right now is I've given the government of El Salvador the choice of to completely blow it up, okay, or run decentralized medicine against all the other versions of medicine, like functional medicine, you know, physical therapy, you know, chiropractic care. I mean, you name the branch of healthcare that you're familiar with, naturopathic doctors, shamans. I mean, I don't give a shit who it is. Acupuncturist. Because I believe, and I think Bukele feels the same way, that the only way to get the best evidence is to run all the beliefs and all the systems for about 20, 25 years, putting it through this decentralized science, finding out what really works and what doesn't, and throwing out the superfluous, you know, via negativa, and keeping the stuff that really works. Because I fundamentally believe that there are some things in centralized medicine that are good. There's some things in chiropractic care that are good. There's some things in homeopathy that may be good. There's some things in naturopathic medicine that may be good. I think there's a lot more, right, in decentralized medicine, but I'm sure there's some things maybe that I even believe currently right now, that will be shown to be wrong. And I'm completely open with that. But I know that it needs to be studied appropriately when scientists are all on the level playing field and the science is not filtered through the oracle of a journal editor who doesn't want, you know, to test or have light controls in, say, a nutritional study that's done on rats, you know, when we're not rats, you know, we're humans. There's nothing about the way science is done in centralized medicine that leads me to believe it's accurate at any level. And, you know, I said that in the Huberman podcast with Rick, you know, Eddie Chang, who's one of Huberman's friends, who's a neurosurgeon, he made the guess that 50% of what was published in the literature was horseshit. I said it, I think it's more like 99%.
It's all being done under blue light, as you said.
Well, not only that, it's also being done on non-human subjects.
Right.
No, and I would even tell you, I just did a consult. I told you I was a little bit late to this podcast. I just did a consult with a kid that has a pretty bad vaccine injury. And he asked me a really good question, a 13-year-old kid. And he wanted to know why dermatologists and ophthalmologists were so negative on the sun. And I told him the whole story. And the reason I'm relaying this to you, this study was actually done on humans, but this goes to prove to you how important not only doing it in humans is, but also the light controls. It was the original story of why dermatologists and ophthalmologists are really negative about the sun. It was on retroretinal hyperplasia in kids that had kernicterus and bilirubin problems when they're born, you know, jaundiced babies. And they used isolated UVA and UVB light. They didn't use the other frequencies of the sun. And they made the assumption that that UV light is equivalent to what's in the sun. And it turns out it's not. I mean, anybody looks at the Pink Floyd album cover knows that. And it turns out the antidote for UV light is actually the other six colors in the appropriate amounts that are there. And it turns out if you take a jaundiced baby and put it in the sun with all seven of those things, that's the best way to treat a child. The way we do it now is we put them in blue light, which is actually one of the stupidest things you can do. But guess what? The reason they do it is because those papers that they did on UV light, they believe that the UV leads to, you know, DNA damage and everything else. And all the things that they publish, all the things that they say, you have to go back and look at it. They're done in non-human subjects and they're done with artificial UV light. Well, the light that's behind me now, that's the light that we need to be testing. And we need to be testing humans, not, you know, nocturnal mice and rats. That's the reason why decentralized science has a completely different mindset. Because if you don't have light controls and you don't have species controls, I mean, just so you're clear on this, I put a tweet out probably 2 weeks ago, and it's on my forum, that big scientists all over the world, and I actually shared this with Dr. Alexis Callan, that they're now finding out that studies that are done on men are not equivalent to of things that are done in women. And we can no longer assume that what's done in a man works in a woman. So I tell people all this in centralized medicine to show them we have this belief that everybody should be on aspirin to thin their blood to reduce their coronary risk. Do you know that the data shows that it has absolutely no effect in women, but it actually has a very marginal effect in men? Do any of the doctors out there tell women that you don't need to be doing this? No, they don't. Not only that, the same studies also show that aspirin, if you do take it, tends to work better at night than in the morning. Does anybody get told that? No, because everybody takes a baby aspirin when? In the morning. It's the stupidest fucking thing ever. But this is the reason why this stuff's important. And these are the things that I plan on running through this decentralized network. For example, I told Sam, many of the old papers, like we have from Ansel Keys and all the diet wars, we will be able to put them through this zero chain or zero knowledge proof system, and we will find out how much bullshit really is in the literature. In other words, I'm taking this to the nth level that I told Huberman, and I'm going to prove Eddie Chang wrong. I'm going to show you how much of what's published in the literature is bullshit with this system. So guess what? I'm not just talking about new science. I'm going after all the sacred cows. I'm leaving nothing unturned.
Hey, folks, are you ready to take control of your health and feel your best? At Avantia Health Optimization, which is my health coaching company, we get that everyone is different. So we tailor our coaching programs just for you. Meaning we're not just handing you some cookie cutter program. We're not giving you some documents and saying, hey, just here, go do this on your own. No, we listen to your goals. We hear what you're trying to accomplish. We learn about your habits and routines and time management and approaches and everything in between. And it is completely tailored to you. So if you're dealing with stress, sleep issues, weight loss, changing your diet, being consistent with exercise, or if you just want to feel more vibrant and awake, our health coaches are here to help. Now, for a limited time, you can try our health coaching for just $1. Yes, your first health coaching session is just $1. It's a great way to see how personalized health coaching can make a real difference in your life. And it is just $1 because I know a lot of people have never tried health coaching. They don't really know what it's all about. A lot of people still think that I'm a personal trainer, which is not at all what I do as a health coach. So if you want some proof about how we've helped people, you can check out the testimonials on our website from clients who have already transformed their health with us. Head over to AvantiaHealthOptimization.com, or if it's easier, you can go to MikeVera.com. That's Mike, V as in Victor, ERA.com, to learn more and snag your $1 first session today. So let's get started on your journey to a healthier, more awake you with Avantia Health Optimization. Now back to the show. I get the sense that at least one of the things that drives you is the fact that you're awake. And what I mean by that is I could tell you're pissed off. But what I mean is, like, you've talked about the history. Like, you know that what is going on today, the broken models, aren't due just to incompetence. I mean, you talk about the Rockefellers. You talk about the Gates. You talk about everything else.
I'm going to tell you something, Mike. I'm going to interrupt you. This is one of the things that gets me really angry. So many people on Twitter, so many of my detractors want to blame the ignorance, the stupidity, that they're not this smart. You're fucking dead wrong. This is all being done by design. And I'm going to tell you right now, there is nothing in COVID with these jabs that wasn't planned. Just like there's nothing that's going out of Bill Gates' mouth that's not planned. There's a reason Bill Gates, dermatologists, and ophthalmologists all have the same game plan to block the sun, because it's profitable. And anybody who tells you different, they are absolutely lying to you. I don't want to give these people any oxygen that wants to blame this on ignorance. And that includes the politicians that are in Washington, D.C. They'll say, oh, they don't know it. We're seeing it play out right in front of us right now with the Trump assassination. Yeah. It is blatantly obvious that this was an inside job. But we have the new Secret Service guy trying to convince you that, oh, no, this was just incompetence and we don't have timelines and this and that. But guess what? The reason this works, it's because about 60% of the people in the United States have been so dumbed down by Google and Meta's blue light patents that they're all low agency. And guess what? I don't focus on those people, Mike. I focus on the people that actually have good melatonin and dopamine levels, who actually can critically think in a decentralized fashion. I'm interested in the people who are not the sheeps, the lions. I want to wake the lions up. Okay? Evolution has taught us that extinction events happen for a reason. Well, guess what? If you want to stay low agency, you stay low agency. You vote for Kamala Harris. You know, you can vote for Trump, but I'm not doing that. I'm deciding that I'm going for the people that are fully decentralized. And you know what? People that say, well, they can't win, then you're just not part of my tribe. It's as simple as that. That's like saying, hey, we should live in Web3 instead of this environment behind me. That is bullshit. If you think your life should be lived with, you know, Apple Oculus glasses on your eyes, then guess what? Turn the podcast off right now. You are not who I'm speaking to. I'm speaking to the savages out there. I'm speaking to the people who are sick and tired of being lied to, being taken advantage of. And I'll be the first one to tell you this. I believe the American populace is the reason why we have all these failing institutions. Why? Because we've been apathetic for 75 years and let these fucking idiots in Washington, D.C. get away with what they've gotten away with. And then they got help from their corporate partners. Don't think that Zuckerberg and Sergey Brin or Gates are the only bad guys. No, no, no. They don't get where they're at without the criminals in D.C., without our help. And the people that I'm talking to are the people that are mad. Like, I hope you don't cut this part out, but when I was at the Bitcoin conference last week, Sam had me sit down to a guy named Kyle Kemper, he's big in the Bitcoin community, but he's a huge supporter of Bobby Kennedy. And I sat there and listened to Bobby's speech, and I thought it was a spectacular speech about what he would do as president when it related to medical freedoms and Bitcoin. Kyle sat next to me and Sam when Trump got up on the stage, and everybody, of course, is listening to Trump. They're standing up. Me and Kyle just sat down and listened to what he said. Just listening to what he said, from a Bitcoin perspective, I was like, okay, yeah, that's good. But from this idea that I'm trying to bring to you, Trump's speech was like, I felt impotent. Like, it didn't have any substance or structure. He was talking to Nicole Shanahan's ex-husband. He was trying to placate the crypto bros in Silicon Valley, you know, to get their votes. And I'm like, why would I settle for a B, a C, or a D when I got an A available? And I guess what I'm trying to tell you in this podcast is I hope I alienate the sheep in your audience. I'm only talking to the savages and the lions, the people that say, you know, this is really interesting, but I need to do something with this information. Okay. It's not good enough to know. You must do something with it. And the same thing is true in politics. It's great that you may feel warm and fuzzies for Trump, or you may feel warm and fuzzies for Kamala, but look at what they're doing to the populace and then make your decision from there. Become an informed voter. I don't give a shit who you vote for. All right. I've already hedged my bet. I got one leg in one country and one leg in the other. Why? Because the truth, Mike, I don't trust Americans. I think most of them are fucking idiots. That's the truth, because they're centralized. They have been centralized by our systems, and they like going through the drive-through of life. They like Netflix. They like their coffee. They like going to the doctor and getting a prescription for an ear infection and think that's a good thing. They like going to the functional medicine doctor and spending $600,000 a month on supplements that don't fucking work because they think it's good. They're more in touch with their feelings than fucking reality. And I'm telling you, I'm interested in reality. I'm interested in nature. I'm interested in decentralized networks and how it actually fixes our mitochondrial biology so that you become a savage again.
Well, I know Bukele definitely sees your health vision. Do you think he's as awake as you are?
No, I don't, because he wears sunglasses too much, but I'm always on his ass. And I am. I am on his ass. When his brother got married and I was there, hopefully someday he'll tell you the story. You know, he changed all the light bulbs in the place where his brother got married, and they did have it inside a caldera, which I will tell you is spectacular. But the wedding was still done at night, and it lasted too long into the night. And he did make a beautiful speech to his friends and family and told them, look, this blue light, the reason you're here, the reason I changed all these light bulbs, because now I realize this is important. So even with President Bukele, do I want him to step pedal to the metal? Right now, President Bukele is the goat of all presidents, but I'm telling you, there's more fat on the bone. In other words, he can become a savage. And I'm not done. And I think the cool thing with President Bukele is that he is open to becoming a savage. See, I don't know if that's true with either Bobby, Trump, or Kamala. And if I really, really think about it, I would rank them. Bobby is probably the apex predator. I think Trump is probably like a wombat, a badger. Tough, but just not as good as he could be. And I think Kamala is a total sheep. But she's the most dangerous of all three because she's pushing us to the Venezuela model, you know, the Bernie Sanders model of the United States. I mean, we've flipped the script between McCarthyism in the 50s and where we are right now. And we've let the people who are sucking off the tit of big government, you know, make most of the calls. That's the reason why they don't need the military to go invade the United States. They have all the illegal aliens doing it for them already. That's exactly what's happening. This, they blamed the J6ers for an insurrection. I think the insurrection is going on right now. You've got an invasion by foreign entities, and the Democratic Party is actually emboldening them, giving them the money to do and create and destroy civilization inside the United States in different places. And I have said the game plan has been crystal clear from my perspective, literally for 30 years. But I think probably in the last, I'd say in the last 17, 18 years, since we got Obama, that it's ramped up big time, especially through Biden. I think Trump was a speed bump for the Supreme Court, but I have so many problems with Trump because, you know, he was still president, Operation Warp Speed. He still thinks the fucking jabs are a good idea. Yeah. I can't fucking vote for a guy like that. I mean, there's a lot of things I like about Trump, but that's a big one, dude. And you know what? For me, I'm a two-issue voter. Bitcoin and medical freedoms. Right now, Trump is talking a good game about Bitcoin. Not as good as Bobby. And, you know, Bobby took his Monsanto money and put it all on a fucking Bitcoin. And he's actually told people Bitcoin makes up most of his wealth. Well, guess what? He's one of me now. You know, he's definitely my tribe. He's probably got more skin in the game than even Nicole does. But Nicole has done it her own way. She's onboarding. Her new boyfriend is a Bitcoin guy, so I think she's well on the way. I need Trump to realize that he needs to get rid of the bankers that are around him. He needs to get rid of Big Pharma. He's talking that game now. He's talking that game. And I fundamentally believe no matter who wins between those two, because I think one of those two guys is going to win. I think if Trump wins, Bobby's going to be in his cabinet. And I think Bobby can have a huge effect. In fact, I would like to see Bobby run maybe the FDA or something where he could totally take it apart. But do I think Bobby would be a good president? Yeah. Do I have concerns with Bobby too? I do.
What about you? When's your ticket? When do you run for president?
To be honest with you, I don't think I'm electable because I actually throw truth bombs. But you have to realize as a physician, I didn't come to this idea by being an asshole. I've been doing medicine for 30 years, and I can tell you half the people that come into me, they just want the drive-through. Give me the surgery. Give me the pill. Let me get back, you know, and go watch my NFL games and do Circus Maximus. There comes a point in time where you have to say, I had enough of this shit. That for me happened 20 years ago. So I understand both sides of this equation. The people that I like to focus in on now are the people that really are interested in the truth. They want to know how we work. They want to know how to become a savage. You know, I'm talking to you right now. I haven't told anybody this publicly yet, but today's Friday. I have been officially retired for 4 days.
Congrats.
So I'm not doing any surgery anymore. Why? Because I think I'm now at the point where I need to really start taking better care of myself than taking care of people who didn't give two shits about themselves, you know, through emergency rooms on trauma call. Why? It's time. It's time, I think, for me to do that. I need to focus in on myself. And the thing that I'm going to miss about it the most, I think, and it may change because I may do some stuff in El Salvador if Bukele wants me to do it. But the thing I think I'm going to miss the most is when I was on trauma call and I was trading time for money, I actually got education out of it. I was still learning things about how people were killing themselves in ways they never saw. It was almost like still going to school. It was like going to medical school, going to residency, but it was a decentralized medical school. And I was able to impart a lot of that on the nurses that I worked with, the doctors that I worked with. And I would tell you, after I did the week, I would be madder than hell, kind of like I am sometimes when I come on and do podcasts. I was mad because I had so many people that I had to prove wrong that didn't realize that working shift work and working under blue light and working in a modern emergency room or operating room is one of the worst places to put the smartest people in the room in. But that's exactly what the centralized system is built. And because it's so profitable, they're not willing to change that. It comes a point in time where you have to innovate from outside the system. And I think I'm at that level now. It's taken me a long time to get there. I've done this a couple times before and then jumped back in when I thought I could. I still had that altruistic thing in me. But I think I've innovated it out of me now. I realized just how dysfunctional the system is and how dysfunctional the people running the system is. That's the real problem. And I'd love to tell you that it's ignorance, my friend, you know, which is where we started this. It's not. It's nefarious. It truly is nefarious. And it kills me to say that. But even some of the people that are in healthcare that have good intentions, they don't realize that they are working for bad actors. And it reminds me of what Martin Luther King said, that you can have good intentions, but if you stay silent when the bad actions go down, you're as guilty as the person doing the evil. And I have to tell you, that is kind of where I'm at with centralized medicine and centralized healthcare. And I know a lot of doctors who follow me, a lot of doctors who are my members, they feel the same way, but they're not in a position yet to cut the umbilical cord like I just did. And I'm probably the one person in the world that understands that better than anybody else, because I've had this feeling for 20 years. And it's really hard to walk away from something you know that you're at the top of your game doing. I mean, I've been doing neurosurgery a long time. I've never been sued one time. Not too many neurosurgeons can say that. And it's not because I'm smarter than them. It's because I do things different than they do. I use light, water, and magnetism to help my patients get better outcomes. If you get better outcomes, there's no reason for them to sue you. Now, I will tell you, if you go to, you know, those Rate MD sites, the people that are interested in centralization, those are the ones that give you a 0 and 1 star. Why? Because they want the prescription. They want the quick cervical fusion. They want the surgery. You know, it's kind of crazy. We're talking about this. My nurse, her ex-husband, has been having a problem with his back, I don't know, for like the last month. And his son actually just told me what his MRI results were. And we were sitting in a coffee shop. Sam was there. And I said, you know, just reading this thing to me, I said, let me tell you what the centralized orthopedic surgeon and neurosurgeon is going to do. He needs an L2 to L5 fusion, and they're going to do it inner body. They're going to do screws, this and that. And he looks at me, he goes, why? I said, do you know how profitable that surgery is for the doctor? I said, I guarantee you that's what's going to happen. So we're at the end of the coffee visit. Turns out one of the ex-husband's friends is a neurologist who sends the report to the orthopedic surgeon, literally not even 20 minutes later. Oh, he needs an L2 to L5 fusion.
Called it.
And I sat there and I said, no, this is what he needs. This is how I would do it. And she looks at me and she hasn't talked to her ex-husband in a long time. She says, fuck it. She starts banging out what to do. And I said to her, I said, how much chance do you think he's going to do to listen to you? Why? You're not his wife anymore. He probably doesn't trust you. And she goes, well, it's still worth a shot. See, that's the difference between me and her. I think you can help people, but if they're not willing to help themselves, you as the physician got to walk away. Why? Because that's how you burn out. That's why so many doctors are burning out in centralized medicine now, because they don't have an answer for chronic disease. And I can tell you, there's a lot of good doctors, you know, that have good intentions. But the problem is when you don't know what the root cause really is and you keep doing the wrong things, dude, that's that's absolutely the wrong thing to do. You have to take account and say, look, I need to do something different here to help my patients. And unfortunately, we've got 100 years of selling centralized medicine to people. So that's the reason why you'll see a lot of doctors have, you know, 0, 1, and 2 stars from these rate MD places. Because guess what? Those are all the people that we've gotten used to getting prescriptions for ear infections or surgeries for, you know, so they can go back and work on Wall Street. And the problem is most of the people out there that, you know, using those rating systems, they have no fucking earthly idea what game is really being played here. Like the best doctors are probably not the ones that are in the ivory towers that got 5 stars because they're doing everything that their bosses want them to do so they can make all their bonuses.
Right.
And that's a very counterintuitive way of looking at things, but that's the system that we're in.
Well, congratulations on retiring. And I'm glad to hear that you're going to focus on your, like, taking care of yourself more. Not that you weren't, but you know, that's
well, cool. I wasn't. Let's be honest. I wasn't. I was trading.
Oh, okay.
I was trading time for money. Like, you cannot be healthy, you know, being on trauma call 24/7 for a week straight. I've been doing that through COVID, but that was the only way that I could actually help people through COVID, how I could get the message out to doctors that were stuck in the hospital, how I could tell hospitalists, stop giving people this jab, stop being compliant with the system. That was the only way to do it. You had to go to the front lines to educate people. And I would tell you, I probably, in 2020, I was probably 20% successful. 2021, 40%. I just did my last 3 weeks in June. I was about 80, 85% successful. Everybody knew that I had had it up to here. I mean, it boiled over to the point where actually I got into it with a transfer service who basically wanted to transfer a dead patient to our facility. And I said, fuck that. I'm just drawing a line here. And I said, we have to stop this insanity. Somebody's got to stop it. And I think talking about it on podcasts like this, while some people will think it's probably not a great thing, I think it's a good thing because I think this will resonate with doctors out there that are fed up. They're just afraid to say anything because their paycheck is tied, you know, to these decision-making trees. And I understand that conundrum. I really, truly do. But that's also why what I'm doing with President Bukele and what I'm doing with Sam and what I'm doing with Zorp is so important, because we're going to build a system where you don't have to do that anymore. No one in the state, no one in a corporation is going to be able to legislate how they get in between you and your patient. In other words, it's going to go back to where it used to be when it was a true doctor-patient relationship and there was no Oracle problem of a CEO in a hospital or the medical staff bylaws or who's ever running the neurosurgery committee or the orthopedic committee or, you know, the ICU committee and tell you that, oh, you have to meet skip data or you have to follow Medicare's rules or you have to do this even if it's bad for the patient. Like if every patient doesn't leave with a statin prescription, you know, this is a tragedy. You know, it's the same thing that happens in a functional medicine doctor's office. If you don't get your turmeric and coenzyme Q10, you're going to fucking die. It's the same freaking game plan. It's just that they changed the scripts. That's it. And patients need to get that. They got to stop being so apathetic and start realizing they got to get their skin in the game. When you realize that the game in nature, you are built for ultimate fidelity. When I take you and plant you in the right place and you magically see things that everybody tells you can't get better, what do I ask in payment? Just go tell your friends. That's all I want you to do. Because the only way we're going to change this system is to take all the dumb assholes out there that think centralized medicine is the best in the world and blow it up.
Well, I love that. And that's why you're a perfect fit for the show, Healthy and Awake, because we do challenge the status quo in mainstream medicine. And you're really at the top of people saying that. So thank you. Next, I have some questions here that were actually asked by my audience from the last episode we did together, as well as the email I put out announcing this show. And on the last episode that you and I did, you talked about creativity and the role that blue light plays in that.
So guess where creativity comes from? It's a cognitive de-evolution because you're creating hypoxia, but you know what you're doing?
You're destroying melanin in the process to create dopamine. Dopamine is what does that. But you don't realize that Michelangelo, Sistine Chapel, all the things that humans did in the Renaissance is a function of actually destroying the melanin.
I'm actually wondering if your friend Rick Rubin leveraged that information. If you think he might, you know, because I know he knows about the harms of blue light, but I'm wondering if he uses increased amounts of blue light to heighten his creativity.
I would actually tell you that I have never asked him that question, but I will tell you what my perception is. I think he leveraged it without realizing he did it. And I think that fits with his early career. Now, because he is awake, I don't think he leverages it that much. And I think he's in a very different situation now because I think he understands truly how the music business works and how destructive it is. And this is the reason why people don't put out their best work later in life. And I think if you think about what Rick's done recently, that kind of makes me proud to be his friend. When he went back in and saw a broken man like Johnny Cash at the end of his career and basically made Johnny Cash whole again at the end of his career and end of his life, that actually tells me the decentralized part of Rick. In other words, all the things that happened with the destruction of the Beastie Boys was put back in the recipe with Johnny Cash. But do I think Rick leverage that in a bad way with a negative connotation, say early in his career with those guys? I don't think so, because knowing Rick, I think he was ignorant. And the way I can say that is, I mean, just look at his effect. At the time, he was 420 pounds, a vegan, wearing sunglasses at night. He's not that guy anymore. And I guess what I was railing to you a little bit earlier about the obedient idiots that are out there, that's kind of where Rick was in the beginning of his career, I think, in music. And I think what happened as he went through his own health challenges, he got wiser and wiser and wiser. And I think it actually affected not only the person that he is, but also the music producer he is. And I actually think some of the work that he's done, even though the stuff earlier in his career probably made him more famous, I think about like the work that he did with Adele, some of the stuff, you know, that he's done later on with some of the heavy metal guys, the stuff that he did with Johnny Cash, I think is the best example, because Johnny Cash was a lot like Rick. He was a train wreck. And it was proof positive that even before Johnny died, he completely flipped the script on what everybody believed he was. And I'd love to hear Rick talk about this sometime, to be honest with you. I don't know if he will. Who knows? Him and I are supposed to do a podcast with Bukele. Maybe this is something I'll ask him. I just don't know if he's going to feel comfortable talking about it on a podcast, but I can tell you that I have never discussed this with him. So I'm giving you my opinion of how I see it. But I'd like to hear his take on it as well.
Well, I hope you do get to talk to him about it. And I'll just throw it out there. He's always welcome here on the Healthy and Awake podcast if you ever wanted to help get him on this show.
Hey folks, just a quick pause on our discussion today because I have something important to share. You know that I'm always in front of screens because I do content creation, my health coaching is done online, I'm doing the podcast, I'm writing, all these different things. And that artificial light can be disruptive to the circadian rhythm, and that can impact your health pretty severely. So that's why I wear Bond Charge blue light blocking glasses. It's not just a stylish accessory, but it's really a daily defense against eye strain, headaches, disrupted sleep schedules, and really that circadian rhythm that I'm trying to protect. So it does protect your eyes. It does improve your sleep. It does help maintain your circadian health. And honestly, I've experienced fewer headaches and just a better overall sense of my health. I feel healthier when I wear these. And yeah, they do look cool as well. I get compliments all the time, especially when I wear them out at a restaurant or something like that. So for those who are looking to boost their health in this digital age, I've got some good news. As part of the Healthy and Awake community, you can get 15% off by going to the show notes, clicking the affiliate link, and using the coupon code Healthy and Awake with dashes. So that's Healthy Dash and Dash Awake. And you can get 15% off of these very cool Bond Charge blue light blocking glasses. And that's a great way to enhance your daily health routine and your style. Now let's dive back into the episode. But I did want to mention, I've changed so much about my own health routine since learning about your work. I only work out outside. All my work that I do at a desk, I just have a table outside, don't wear sunglasses, don't wear sunscreen, obviously wearing the blue light blocking glasses. I've never felt less creative. So there does seem to be a correlation there. But one thing I'm wondering about, you know, I do preach these ideas to a lot of people. And I know weight loss is something you've talked about and the role of circadian health. Mm-hmm. I've worked in a gym, a blue lit gym, you know, in the beginning of my personal trainer years. I've seen people lose weight and appear to get healthy basically with just food and exercise, mm-hmm. and without any regard to light and that sort of stuff in their environment. So I'm wondering about, can you elaborate more on the role about circadian health with regard to weight loss?
Yeah, that's pretty simple. I think you probably forgot the other part. People that do that, Mike, what does the literature say is the effectiveness of that method? The recidivism rate is huge. In other words, you get the early effect, but what happens chronically? You actually tend to gain it all back plus what you lost. That's actually in the literature, and that's actually true. It mimics actually what I see as well. And I tried to explain recently the reason why. So I know that you're pretty well-versed on the whole weight loss thing, but let me tell you the part that we're missing. I just did a podcast with Dr. Alexis Cowan, and I truly do hope you have her on, because she has become the PhD researcher that I thought Huberman was going to be. And she's actually more well-trained than Huberman is. Why? Because she trained at the Rabinowitz Metabolic Lab, which is one of the best metabolic labs in the country. It's at Princeton University. So she is truly what I would call a food guru, a metabolic guru. She's smarter on the biochemistry stuff than any of the food gurus that you see out on the internet. It's the Rob Wolfs, the Mark Sissons, you know, any of those guys. And when she heard the podcast I did with Rick, she didn't believe it. She went down the rabbit hole herself. And she's now, I'd say, probably a year and a half out. And we did this podcast. And I explained to her this one key feature that I don't think a lot of people have put together about the story about food and exercise and light. If you look at the wiring diagram of mitochondria and the whole non-visual photoreceptor system, you'll find out that people who exercise under blue light and do food, when they lose weight, what happens? Their basal metabolic rate, does it fall or does it go up? It actually does something that guarantees the weight loss is going to come back down the road. But when you add UV light to this, the alpha, beta, and gamma MSH actually change the satiety center and they change the appetite center. And guess what happens? When you use UV light and you use food and exercise, your basal metabolic rate stays elevated. And you don't, even when you're calorie restricting, and guess what happens when you exercise and do it in the blue light gym? You calorie restrict, but you do it under blue light. So you're always going to have a high recidivism rate. And the reason is UV light is the key to this story that everybody misses. It's the change in the basal metabolic rate. Everybody knows if you go on a starvation diet, you'll lose weight, but you won't stay that way. Why? Because your basal metabolic rate never changes. It turns out, the part of the Ponzi story that I tried to get Huberman to understand, that I've been trying to get everybody else to understand for 20 years, but it seems like Dr. Alexis Cowan is the only one that it fucking dawned on her. This makes sense now. The reason why calorie restriction has never worked in primates is every single primate study done with calorie restriction, Mike, has been done inside a lab, not in UV light. That's the reason it doesn't work. But guess what? You see all the pictures in Western A. Price's book of all the humans that did it. They were in UV light and it seemed to work there. And nobody could figure out, well, why can't we get the research to marry up to the real story. It goes back to what we talked about earlier. You got to study the mammal in proper light. And it turns out UV light is that story. So when you really understand the leptin melanocortin pathway, the key is what light does to the basis of your basal metabolic rate when you go through the weight loss is the key to keeping it off for long term. That's the key. And I think most people who've lost a lot of weight will say, hey, look, you know, for the first 6 months, 2 months, year, year and a half, but you find out every time you go further and further past that, that you your diet has to get more restrictive, more restrictive, more restrictive. Then even when you eat, say, a strict carnivore diet, you still gain weight. And right. I would say the reason how you do it, like where I want you to go, the next level that I talked about 15 years ago, before the paleo guys try to smash everything to smithereens, was the guys who were the Sherpas. The Sherpas are right. The magic key for people to understand. These people, only 140 pounds, but they have the strength of three humans. They can carry Europeans dying off the mountain down, no problem. They're all tan. They all eat high protein, high fat diet. They do have some carbohydrates like lentils and things like that. But what people fail to realize, they're 20,000 feet up in the air. That's where the UV light is. That's why they maintain their melanin. And guess what? They're shredded. Their basal metabolic rate is spectacular. And they don't eat that much. That's the part of this equation that everybody has forgotten. What's the other part? What are the two things that control the circadian mechanism? Light and temperature. What's the temperature, Mike, at 20,000 feet in Nepal? Is it the same as it is in El Salvador at the beach? No. So guess what? All these things are built into that system. So I would say to you as a guy working out in the gym, even if you're doing it the right way, are you using cold and UV light to actually get that set point of your basal metabolic rate right so you can go long-term? Because one of the things that I've argued both with Urin, Peter Attia, Sean Baker, all those guys, is they think that having big muscles is a benefit. I'm going to tell you it's not. It's a detriment to longevity. And the reason why is we're not designed to put our mitochondria in our muscles. We're designed to put them here in our heart. And it turns out anybody who has huge hypertrophied muscles, when you get older, you always die of heart disease. I always like to talk about Charles Poliquin, who is my friend, you know, and it turns out Alexis Callan is friends with a Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, who is one of Poliquin's, you know, students. And she's still making the same fucking mistake that Poliquin's making. But guess what? Alexis, I think, now understands what Uncle Jack's been selling for 20 years. And she's trying to help Gabrielle Lyon understand this and actually help her audience get it. And I think when you understand the wiring diagram of how UVA, UVB, UVC, and VUV light work with POMC, nitric oxide, work with the VDR receptor on inner mitochondrial membrane, all of a sudden you see everything come to fruition, and then you do a hard stop. You say, okay, let's talk about the basal metabolic rate part. Where does that come from? It comes from thyroid hormones. What is thyroid hormones made out of? Tyrosine. Or phenylalanine. What are those? Those are aromatic amino acids that absorb what? UV light. Oh, that's the fourth amigo in the story. And you got to get that one not only through your eye, but on your skin. Why? Because mammals, specifically humans, not only do we make most of our TSH, T3, and T4 through the central retinal pathways, but we have extra nodal places that we also make it to drive our biology elsewhere. Why? Because it turns out you need free T3 to run most of your neurons in your body. Well, we have the most complex neurologic system in the world. So guess what? It turns out you begin to see why working out in a gym, picking up heavy things, is not really the smartest thing in the world to maintain weight loss for long periods of time. And I guess what I'm trying to tell you is the recidivism rate, I think, for food, porn, gambling, drinking, drugging, they're all the same because they're all tied to a lack of UV light in your environment. So say when you have one of these problems, whether it be obesity or a drug problem or anything else, come down to an area where you have light stability, you have strong UV light, and you'll magically see huge changes. Like, he'll probably get mad at me because he's inside, but we're talking about it. Sam has got a neurologic condition, and I forced him to come to El Salvador, you know, 2 months ago. He's already told me, he goes, dude, I don't need the medication I was on, and I'm sleeping like a fucking rock star. So we went to the Bitcoin conference together last week, and I convinced him to come to New Orleans with me because I told him I want to show him my place here, and I wanted to show him, you know, the food scene here because it's spectacular. And even here, he's like, I can't believe this. This morning, he was walking out right behind me doing his Zorp call in there, and he came in, and he said, Jack, I feel like I'm high. I said, you are. It's called beta endorphin. What is nature telling you? We are designed to be addicted to nature and sunlight. It's part of the POMC story. And I guess the questions that Dr. Alexis asked me really elucidated the question that I think you've asked and many other people have asked me, but they never got to the bottom of it. Why? Because I don't think they understand the science as I do. And she said this to me. She goes, Jack, you think that everybody thinks like you. She goes, nobody thinks like you. She goes, I realized it. And that's why I decided to ask you these questions, so that now you can explain to people why the gym and why the weight loss never lasts a long period of time when you are subtracted from UV light. And it turns out the UV light and the cold part links directly to the whole Sherpa story. All that stuff I wrote in the CT4 and the CT6 blogs literally 15, 20 years ago. This is like not new news where you and I are breaking. The problem is, I think people are beginning to wake up why it really works. And when you actually see it for yourself for the first time, you go, okay, I got it. Hold my beer. I know what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I've been trying to tell people, that yes, you can tap that superhuman pathway, but you need to realize the life that we're all living now, you don't even realize how you're breaking some of these rules with blue light and non-native EMF until you actually truly understand this basic wiring diagram and how we stop electron chain transport. It's almost like UV light acts like cyanide, except without killing you. It actually extends your life. And this is the reason why my pinned tweet on Twitter always says, the more sun you get, the longer you're going to live. You don't need to know anything else. All the other stuff in Peter Attia's book is what I call superfluous fluff. Maybe make for a good read, but I don't think you need it. Just like I don't think you need the supplements. I don't think you need a lot of the drugs. You know, and if you have a disease, like say you have glomerulonephritis, and it's not, yeah, you're going to need to be on certain drugs. You're going to need to change certain things. But ultimately, you're going to need to realize you have a serious lack of UV and red light at the electronic and vibrational level in your kidney, and we need to change that. And it's not going to happen when you live in fucking Minnesota with a mink coat on all day. It's just not.
Well, a separate but kind of similar topic is hyperhidrosis. I've heard you speak just a little bit about that. And as a health coach, that's one of the populations I try to help through lifestyle changes. Now, you know, that involves food and cutting coffee and all kinds of things. But in terms of circadian health, I would imagine it looks something like what we've just discussed, which is try to get outside more and try to get less exposure to artificial light.
Well, the way it works is, remember that sweat glands in your body are controlled by the autonomic nervous system. The autonomic nervous system, there needs to be balance in the system. The balance in the system is light and dark. Light doesn't have the effect without dark, and dark doesn't have the effect without light. This is the reason why, you know, on several of my Instagram posts recently, I actually made the comment, you cannot see the stars unless you have darkness at night. And you have to realize the same thing is true in your life. So hyperhidrosis leads to an imbalance between the autonomic nervous system. What controls almost all the neurotransmitter releases there? It's actually leptin and melanin. So if you have a leptin problem or a melanin problem in that distribution of where you sweat, you're going to have that problem. So what's the fix? If you go back and look at the original leptin blog, what do I say? I want you to use sweating as one of the mechanisms to tell you when things are coming back online. People that have diabetes, type 1, type 2, or even LADA or type 3 will tell you one of the interesting things they know about their skin is it's pale. It has no hair, and they don't sweat at the appropriate times. Well, guess what? this is all tied to this system. So when someone sweats too much at the inappropriate times, it's also a backward system. And it turns out the biggest problem is usually too much artificial light at night, mm-hmm. not so much the UV and the infrared. And you have to realize these are two opposite ideas around the eccrine sweat glands. And when you realize the eccrine sweat glands are designed to cool the semiconductors on our surface so that we can assimilate light appropriately, you start to go, okay, so this is even a leptin melanocortin story. And it turns out that I have to have a good relationship between the light and the dark cycle. That's why I tell you, what does decentralized mean? This isn't I think everybody who listens to me thinks it's just a sun story. But you got to have the darkness with it. And that's what circadian biology is all about. And you have to mind your darkness at night, and you also have to mind your sun during the day. And I think when you do this, your hyperhidrosis can improve tremendously. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not people out there that have like damage to their superior cervical ganglia and they get, you know, a sweaty palm or every time they shake their hand. Yeah. That actually, you can have actually a true imbalance from a problem, developmental problem. That doesn't happen to everybody. I won't even do surgery on those people to fix that problem.
Like a sympathectomy?
Right. I won't do any of that until they follow my leptin prescription. And I tell them I want them tan from pretty much their head all the way down to their nipples. And when they do that and they get tan, they're like stunned. They're like, I can't believe it. And they always come back and say, you know, where I used to sweat a lot, I also now have more hair. Like some of the women get pissed off at me because they come back like, well, you know, I have to shave my armpits. I'm like, well, why don't you use your hair as an electromagnetic antenna that tells you that it's coming back? I've had diabetic patients say to me, yeah, this is crazy. I'm starting to get hair back on my legs. I'm like, that's a good sign. You know, and the big one, because we talked about the basal metabolic rate, you may not know this, your readers may not know this, but old doctors who are going to listen to this are going to go, oh shit, I never thought about this. Remember I told you the last little part of UV light with tyrosine and phenylalanine, that T3, T4 story? People that have hypothyroidism lose the lateral third of their eyebrow. Guess what happens when you do this right? It comes back.
Get it back. Wow.
So guess what? This is also a leptin story. And how does this all work? Everybody knows that the suprachiasmatic nucleus is the eye clock that controls everything. But what they don't know is the next hierarchy is the skin. Why? Because the skin is also a neural crest derivative. I should say a neuroectodermal derivative like the brain is. So once the brain is right, then you got to get the skin right. The skin controls all the other clocks. The big one is being the gut clock. Well, when you think about skin, remember everything about hyperhidrosis or hair follicles, it's all tied to skin biology. Got it? That's where the immune system actually comes. People don't even realize the number one place where more immune cells are in the human body is in your skin. Guess why? Because that's where the fucking light is.
Hmm. Well, it makes sense. And one of the reasons I help people with hyperhidrosis is because I pretty much have it of the hands. So for me, my whole life, handshakes have been a nightmare. And I've effectively seemed to have cured it completely. And I do think the circadian aspect of things really played a big role. Coffee too. Cutting out coffee was a big one. But
remember, coffee affects the autonomic nervous system. That's the reason why. Yeah. Remember, that is caffeine is a drug related to, you know, dopamine, related to the biogenic amines. And guess what? Those things are all tied. I mean, dopamine is a non-visual photoreceptor. Also made by what? UV light. Tyrosine and phenylalanine make dopamine. That actually is the hormone of addiction. You know, and it's definitely a hormone. People know about it from Parkinson's, but you don't realize that you have to have dopamine and melatonin working in action to renovate all the photoreceptors. So one of the photoreceptors we're talking about now is leptin and melanin. Those are non-visual photoreceptors. When you have optimized melatonin and dopamine, that is how you fix hyperhidrosis. Why? Because you have to fix the non-visual photoreceptors that link to it. And ultimately what gets to it is the eye clock gets the skin clock right. And then guess what happens? All the photoreceptors come back. Hmm. Then you're good to go. And it's not, it takes a while to do, and you can continue to get better and better and better and better.
Wow. Well, I mean, we've covered so much great stuff today. I have more questions, but I want to be respectful of your time. I guess the last question is, are there any questions that when you show up to podcasts, you would hope that people ask you and they just don't do it?
Yeah, I've mentioned it. I think, hopefully you won't cut this out, but I think Alexis Cowan is the one that's actually made me the most happy. Why? Because she came to this as a skeptic and she began to ask me questions and she made me realize, I thought that a lot of the people, especially in the nutrition and food space, would really understand how UV light ties into the story. And I realized that none of them did. I you know, it's kind of like the thing that I found 15 years ago, that if you don't see AM sunrise, you can't fat burn. So if you eat a carnivore or a ketogenic diet and you don't see the sunrise, it's like, you know, I probably shouldn't use a tackless thing there, but it's like really, really stupid. It's makes no sense to do that. And when those papers come out and people realize that I've been right about this the whole time, it's not about me being right. It's that I want you guys to understand it. I want you to understand truly how we work. And I think podcasters have to do a better job asking questions. You know how you get to be really good at asking those questions? You have to understand the science a little bit. You know, Mike, I don't know if you know this because I don't think you've probably listened to me long enough, but the people that have listened to me a long time, I always tell them, read the damn blogs, read what I follow my tweets. Dude, the answers are always there. And if you ask me the question, I'll answer it. But you know what the problem is? Everybody wants the drive through. They don't want to learn all the quantum biologic things. Like, just think about some of the things we talked about here today. And you said, dude, that's really cool. I never thought about this, that, or the other thing. But guess what? That doesn't happen unless the audience members said, Mike, ask him this question.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I think people need to understand, ask me the questions. Now, I'm not going to answer your questions on Twitter. I'm not going to answer them on Instagram. If you want me to answer them, you're going to be a member. You're going to show me your skin in the game, and then I'm going to answer them. And guess what? If I come on a podcast like this, I may answer the one or two questions that you have here. I don't have any problem doing that. But I think it becomes incumbent upon people that run podcasts to do the same thing. Like, you got to have skin in your audience game and say, look, I need to go find people that can answer these questions. Like, if you keep having the same guests on that keep telling you the stupid shit that reinforces your business model, what are you doing? I mean, you're not doing anything for the public health. And, you know, that's my argument with, you know, people like Peter Attia or Huberman. Yeah, I think what they do is great, but you're talking about fucking superfluous shit that doesn't matter. You know, let's move the needle. I mean, that's how I feel when I read journals. I'm like, okay, garbage, garbage. You know, I just go through the papers. And then you come on at one paper and go, wow, now that's an ass kicker. You know, and that's usually one that I'll talk about on Twitter. I'll say, okay, let's talk about this. Let's talk about why it's good. Because ultimately, from that collateral effect, then people, you know, there may be one or two people in the audience go, dude, you just made something click for me. I got it. And I always tell people when I do a podcast, I'm not really speaking to your whole audience. I'm speaking to one, two, or three people, and that's it. And I know probably when you post this, there's going to be some idiot on YouTube that leaves a comment and says, oh, this guy's an arrogant asshole, da-da-da-da-da.
There's always one.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm like, great. Just change the channel, bro.
Yeah.
This podcast wasn't for you. It's just not. And well, I don't think people understand that I'm perfectly okay with that. I always tell people, I'm not everybody's cup of tea. But guess what the flip side is? Some of your audience isn't my cup of tea either.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not supposed to be allowed to say that. But unfortunately, that's kind of how decentralized medicine kind of works.
You said something there. I know I said that was the last question, but real quick, you said the importance of getting the actual sunrise, sunlight. You know, if I'm getting sunlight from noon to six, does that not mean much at all if I don't get the sun, the actual sunrise?
I would tell you, it's not that it means much. It means that you're going to be a guy that consistently gets sunburned when you go in the sun.
Okay.
Remember that. Look, Alexis said something that was really interesting that I think you'll find interesting. She said, I think eventually when this is all said and done and you're dead and buried, Jack, people are going to find out that the real cause of skin cancer is sunglasses, clothing, sunscreen, and us not getting enough of our skin in the sun. And I said, you're right. That's exactly what the cause is. And I don't think people really understand how profound her insight is, because she understands now how the whole system connects together. My goal is to get your audience to understand that. Like, I want you to know, I'm okay with you buying Prada sunglasses. Just put them on your head or in between your boobs. So, when you buy really nice clothes, just do me a favor, take them off and get in the sun. Realize that if you don't see the sunrise, you can't beta oxidate any food. So eating a ketogenic diet when you only get in the sun 12 to 6, dude, that's like, you know, screwing yourself in the butt. It just makes no sense at all. But I know that a lot of people do that. And there's going to be people that listen to this and say, well, dude, I got to work and this and that. I said, okay. Yeah. So you're trading time for money, just like Uncle Jack told you in the beginning of this podcast, he was doing for my reasons. Now, I'm not going to tell you that my reasons were good, but I can tell you why I was doing them and what I'm trying to do, move the needle, because my friends have told me, if I don't do this, who else is going to do it? Nobody else has got this knowledge out there. And what am I trying to do? I'm trying to disseminate this information to guys like you, guys like Alexis, guys like Uberman, guys like Tia. People are going to listen on Twitter. You know, the savages who decide I want to be a savage. I want to be a Sherpa. I don't want to be Sean Baker. Those are the people that I'm fired up about. Like, I want people to sit down and say, yeah, Rob Wolf looks really good. His body looks great. Why does he still have an autoimmune condition? Guess why? He lives in fucking Montana. Okay? But, you know, again, it sounds trite when I say it like that, but I think Rob is ultimately a good guy. It's just that he's been fucking wrong for so long, he can't fathom how wrong he is. And I have been that guy in the back telling him for 20 years that very thing. And the thing is, his goal and my goal has been the same, to change the way we do public health, the way we do things like that. He's chosen the food and exercise path. I've chosen the quantum biology path. I think mine is more accurate. And I've told you in this podcast why I believe that. Doesn't mean everything you heard me discuss with you is correct. I want everybody to fact check Uncle Jack. I'm cool with that. Doesn't bother me in the least. And the reason why I'm cool with it is because I know the photoelectric effect works on Earth as it does everywhere in the universe. Like, I know that. But I also know that biochemistry that Rob learned in his book doesn't work the same on Earth as it does in Pluto or Andromeda or anywhere else. Why? Because the light there is different.
Dr. Jack Cruz, thank you so much for being a guest and for everything that you do, really. You are the epitome of a leader in pioneering health freedom, and I thank you for that. And I know my audience does too. Now, I know you have jackcruz.com. You have a great Twitter. You have a great Patreon. I encourage everybody to go to those. What am I missing? Where else can people find you?
Well, you can be a member of the website. We have different ways. Like, I do Q&As every month for my members. So if you really want to get into your individual issue, you can listen to that. The Q&As, I do it once a month, 5 to 6 hours at a time. If you decide you want to hire me to do consults one-on-one, you can do that. I only do that for members. I don't do it for anybody who's a patron or Patreon. You got to be a member of the website. I don't answer questions on social media just because I'm too busy doing the things I'm doing. You know, I relegate my time for those people. And then the last bit is, if you want to hire me to be your dude, you can do that, but be ready to bring the Bitcoin. That's really the ticket. But I can tell you, when you come to see me, I'm not going to be your doctor forever. I'm going to get you right. And then I'm going to send you back out, and hopefully you do the things that you need to do once we fix the problem that you got. And if you can't do the things that I need you to do to fix the problem you got, I'm going to shake your hand and say good luck to you. So you have to be ready for that, because that's what decentralized medicine is. Like, I'm going to have skin in your game, but you got to have skin in your own game. And you have to promise me that that's the kind of relationship we're going to have. And if you like that, you'll be a member for a long time. And a lot of my members have been members for 10 or 15 years. And I can promise you, I'll never let you down, but I'll also promise you, I'm going to spank you, you know, with my tongue. I'm going to spank you with my advice. I'm going to tell you things about your family you're not going to like. I'm going to tell you things about your beliefs that you're not going to like. We're going to talk about your health. We're going to talk about your wealth. We're going to talk about your ideology. We're going to talk about the things that you believe. We may even talk about God. We may talk about your prescriptions. We may talk about your functional medicine doctor. We may talk about that, you know, way you start your car is probably not the best way to do it if you're sitting on, you know, a microwave starter in your BMW, but you love the car so much. Yeah, you're probably going to hate my guts for some of that. And I may tell you, yeah, you have a beautiful house in San Francisco, but I do not want you to renovate the nice suite on the Titanic and waste your money. I'm going to tell you to sell it to an obedient idiot who follows Peter Attia's podcast. And you need to probably do something different. I'm that guy. I'm that guy that's going to force you to really look at the cornerstone foundations of how your situation works. And the only way we're going to do that is we have to build a relationship. I have to know where you are, where we're starting. I have to know about your mother, your grandmother. I have to know everything about you. And then we start putting the pieces together. It's kind of like the Da Vinci Code, because it turns out Mike Vera, Jack Cruz, even though we're human, same species, story's always different. Every single person is an N equals one. And that really is the basis of decentralized medicine. That's the reason why I think having a personal relationship with a doctor, not having an oracle between us, whether it be a journal or, you know, a partnership or a hospital or a medical staff bylaws, you can't do that.
Well, folks, be sure to check the show notes so that you can follow him, become a member, check the Patreon, all that good stuff. And again, Dr. Jack Cruz, thank you so much. Folks, stay healthy, stay awake.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Healthy and Awake Podcast. Please remember to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple. Or if you're watching this on Rumble or YouTube, please be sure to give us a thumbs up and leave a comment down below. Let us know what you thought or if you had any questions based on what we talked about in this episode. And of course, it couldn't hurt to share it with your friends, those who maybe are awake or those, of course, who are waking up. Thanks again. Stay healthy. Stay